Welcome to Awake versus Aware, which is a presentation that aims to break the illusions of current events, offer tangible solutions, and prompts the listener to keep their hand off the mind break.
Thanks everybody for joining the Awake versus Aware show, taping on July the 20th, and I'd like to say on the week of Black Moon and New Moon, which is on the 24th. Instead of our usual thing of doing a commenting on a podcast, I was thinking it would be more dynamic to do one on talking about a book or a film or even certain just making it more multidimensional and dynamic, and considering the hype of this the new movie, and because we've been, this whole Marvel Universe and DC, and that trend has been dying down. I like to follow Chris Knowles on, because he worked for Marvel, and he wrote a couple of books on it as far as the mythology of the gods, the demigods, and the metahumans. And there's the decline in how, like, this thing hasn't been making any money for the longest time, and why are they still churning stuff out? And so it's been beyond overplayed. But as a kid, I was big on Superman, Batman, you know, the big figures. And, you know, you eventually grow up. But then what I liked about these newer presentations, and as far as into that they tried to exhaust the public on these presentations, but in suspending disbelief and like, okay, what is the distillation of what I can find useful for myself? And the current, or what, the common thread and theme in all of them, especially since I was into David Wilcock and how he talked about that there's these soft disclosures and predictive programmings, and you know, the elite's got to tell you what's going on before it happens, kind of thing, like with the Simpsons, the supposed predictions in their many episodes, that they're doing the same things in these movies, not just to one of the people we had in, we talked about in Cosmic Soup Show, Kevin Annett, and he's really good in deconstructing tools of control, like religion, Christianity, and even the cross itself has a kind of power, and he called it vampirism, in the way the cross is shaped, the angles. I mean, you have the V and the A there, and how that captures attention, and we know that where attention goes, energy flows. And so that whole thing of Christ on a crucifix, and we talked about this, what was it, like a month ago, month and a half, that it is a kind of, it is a form of psychic vampirism. And totally agree with him. And he just nailed it, pun intended. And so we have these gods, you know, that are shoved in our face and brainwashing us in whatever form they are of one's current cultural time and space. And, you know, because as a kid, I had a Superman doll, and we have Kalos here, of course, him being his own Superman. But he checked out the movie. I watched it twice, the second time just for more of a deeper take and analysis as far as, you know, okay, what are they either trying to not just tell us, but and the reason why I brought up Kevin Annett was he mentioned in some CIA manual that you cannot stop change, but you can always redirect it, channel it. And it's the same thing of, you can't stop a movement, whether it's MAGA or Trump being the supposed king, this psychological operation. But it's the direction of, and obviously we see this in not just MSM, mainstream media, and now what David Icke calls the alternative mainstream media, there's a specific term he gave it, but the gatekeepers, right? There's these, as we said in the previous show, these layers within layers kind of deal. And this kind of stratification, it's how, what is the line between or the layers of awake and then aware? And that's what, to me, this not just delving into conspiracies, but what's most useful. And I think just to change the pace of things and being more lighthearted, the new Superman movie had a lot of the things that's reflective of what's going on now. I mean, in the superficial sense, Trump being a kind of king or Superman of writing all of these executive orders and then going beyond the Constitution and the structure of the country. And while you have others arguing or even showing documentation that, Derek Johnson being one of those examples of that military law precedes the Constitution, and even before the Constitution was written, you've had all of these military angles that are being, I mean, some are saying continuity of government, but it's again this whole mythologizing of these figures that are put in our face. I mean, it doesn't have to be Trump. It could be, whoever's like, I mean, that's for the West, and then in the East it could be something completely different. But yeah, and even in previous movies, these figures are held up as gods, our current gods, to be worshipped. Yeah, let me just stop there because I'm rambling on, and Kalis has a more grounded and practical perspective sometimes. Sir?
Oh, thanks, man. I only saw it once. I saw it last night, and it wasn't in IMAX or anything, super cool or fancy like that. It wasn't in 3D. It was just your standard, movie going experience. And I personally, I've been turned off by the whole superhuman genre as of late. I found them way too woke, way too much programming. It's just to the point of being unwatchable, to be honest. So I haven't really followed along with these comic book universes, DC or Marvel. So this was the first time in probably several years that I've seen one of these movies. And my first impressions were it was very, very nice visually. It was a very nice visual movie. It was very reminiscent of the original Superman, as far as the opening and ending credit scenes. Some of the depictions of the Fortress of Solitude still retain some of the original imagery as far as the crystals, and there's also very interesting, things we can get into about, information harvesting and crystals, and being a conduit for information transfer. But I found that very, very nice and appealing. And as far as the story went, it seems a lot of these movies these days, even several years ago, the last time I saw one of these types of films was the story seems to be constantly at a fast pace. It's there's a, definitely a trade-off between what you're seeing visually and what the story is presenting. And while this movie was actually a lot less woke than I thought it would be, there certainly were some elements that I was kind of like, yeah, I can see what they're doing here. But overall, I enjoyed it, and I thought it was money decently spent, and again, for me, like the whole movie going experience, is to get the buttery popcorn and to feel like a disgusting slob when you leave. So it's yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed going to go see it.
Yeah, it faces it, it you get the basic and entertainment feel as per, what you do, you the routines you would go on a regular weekend, go out to dinner, blah blah blah, nightclub, whatever, and oh, let's go see the new movie Superman. And yeah, but it fills that gap, then it did more than its job. And I mean, for me, I get more into the story as far as, I like in the Devil's Notebook essay of the villain being the catalyst for change, And when you put your shoes into the villain and what he was achieving, where or wanting to go to, not just being like a super villain, the obvious, inhumanity to man, as it were, but to the whole thing of questioning authority and not be in that worship mode, but that hyper individualism too. And I know it bordered on the technocracy thing, and the parallel was obviously Musk and these other people, in that whole space. But it's also like how mind over matter kind of thing. And we see how obviously that can be turned around towards the end of the movie, the plot twist thing in terms of one's references and resources. And I also like, I mean, the whole thing of sci-fi reality, which is what this radio station is based on, cosmic reality. I mean, not just from a spiritual psychic angle, but there's just so much out there we don't know. That's what's going on. I'm gonna find that quote from Lockheed Skunk Works, I think CEO, and I'll quote it later, of like basically, and this is echoed all over the place too, of the people I listen to regularly, that what we're shown publicly versus what's really going on militarily and underground and in research and these alphabet agencies is at least, probably most likely more, a decade ahead of what we're given publicly. And that sci-fi and movies, they tell you blatantly of what they got. And like, for example, the not so much a revelation, but it's like a reiterance of people like and how I found this radio station in Shanghai, Project Camelot, how it's been known that, and how Project Camelot was talking about. It's been known that DUMS, deep underground military bases, underground facilities of experimentation and research has been going on for since the military started or what have you. That, I mean, okay, tell us something that's a little bit more updated. And the public presentation of, because the whole thing of nanotech, and to me that first went around through Tony Pantelarescu back 15 years ago. Yeah, he's 15 years into researching, dismantling, detoxing this stuff out of the body using homemade stuff, DIY stuff. And he does a show every other day still on Rumble, which is incredible. And he's pretty black-pilled. I don't know what his recent stuff is, but he's absolutely worth looking into for the gadgets and stuff he comes up with. But the term nanites, I've only heard use that on X. I follow some guy who I think he's a flat earther, but he does come up with a lot of interesting points as far as the direction of where the world is going, the stratification of, I guess in the broader term, centralization, decentralization, or like the common term is blue pilled, red pilled, and then the sleepers versus the those who are awake kind of thing. But he used the term nanites for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden in this movie that term is used for the nanotech that is basically in everything, even in the air we breathe. And to have it that blatant, and the way it was used as a weapon in so many different ways, that this is super soldier stuff, like secret space program kind of thing, like that whole genre there. And I mean, it looked cool as hell, but like, oh, and then the whole thing with using it for tracking, and the whole thing with targeted individuals, which if you're in Catherine Fitz's membership, she goes deep into detail of how the TI program, gang stalking, poisoning in endless forms. So she was, like, you could say if it wasn't for prayers and God and I don't know, her guides or whatever, like she wouldn't be alive, like going through that kind of those attacks.
I like how I like on that note, I really had to chuckle a bit at the presentation of, especially with Mr. Fantastic and the whole tracking you via nanobots in your bloodstream. I love how that's portrayed as the good guys are doing it. We're the good guys. We're the good guys here. And so we did this because we're the good guys. And I mean, it wasn't quite that, spelled out and blatant, but the sort of subliminal aspect of it is actually quite interesting. It's kind of goes along the same current that most of this type of tech has been following. It's fine because we're the good guys. We just want what's best for you. And so to see that portrayed in a major cinema film was quite interesting. I was like, wow, I'm not surprising, but I found it very interesting. Just that very sub, and I think most of that would be lost amongst most of the people viewing it. They probably wouldn't put that type of thing together with the stuff we currently are doing in the West. So it's yeah, I found that aspect very, 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 very interesting. And the other part too was, as far as the nanites and the nanotech and all that, was the filling of the lungs. I don't want to give away too many spoilers, if any, but for those who haven't seen it, but there was some talk about, filling of the lungs with this type of nanoparticulate. And I thought that was very, very reminiscent of something we all just went through, just fairly recently. So the tech angle and the sort of soft disclosure angle is very, very, I found this movie to be something of a gold mine for some of that. Like, it's like, oh wow, they're like literally telling you. And like I just said, I'll repeat it again, I think most of that was lost upon most of the audience that saw it. But yeah, it's one of the other things I really enjoyed about the film was I enjoyed it and I didn't enjoy it at the same time, was the sort of humanization of the character Superman. One of my biggest criticisms of previous films about Superman is that he when he loses his powers, when his powers are taken away, he becomes completely useless. Like he cannot do anything at all. Like he's worse than Clark Kent. Like he's completely just useless. And in this film, you see him quite a bit. You see him, taking a beating throughout a lot of the movie, and the way he handles that beating, I think, is a good model for most people to follow. Because throughout these beatings he's taking, he doesn't seem to get flustered or angry. He doesn't lash out like the villain does. The villain Lex Luthor, in my opinion, was a great portrayal of that character, I think, but it did have its pitfalls for me. And for one, he doesn't have the calm and coolness, that you would expect a super villain to have. He's very emotional. He gets very outwardly upset at things. He lashes out. He has very little, it seems to be very little emotional self-control. Whereas Superman in this film has a lot of self-control. Like he's taking these beatings and he seems to be very methodical throughout them. And visually, you can see in the film, like you show him, like he's beat up, like bones are cracking and he's suffering, but he's still very much in control of himself. He hasn't lost it. So that I really, really enjoyed. That's a great example I think most people can follow. And as for the rest goes, yeah, no, there are very interesting parallels, between what's happening now. I was kind of surprised that Hollywood would put out a film that would have such a portrayal. It kind of makes me suspicious. But it goes back to the whole thing that's going on in Gaza. And they sort of visually represented it in the film, which I thought, the representation of it was kind of silly. It's always, the victims are always, incredibly defenseless. I think in that one scene, towards the end, where the army was about to invade and all that, like you got people holding up swords and skies. I think I saw one person with an AK. I was like, well, okay. Like this poor defenseless backwater, third world people. It to me, the strike, the visual representation of it, I think, was for a reason. I'm not quite sure what that reason is, but I found that interesting as well. And quite disappointing, to be honest. But yeah, what were your thoughts on some of that, Mark?
Right, the obvious parallel to Gaza and Israel, and yeah, the multi-layered messaging of, okay, who does this guy represent, and this hero represent kind of thing, like these nods and whatever in behind the scenes, and then you find out later, kind of thing. To me, a big part as far as people who can see through the fog, at least part of it or most of it, is that, I mean, you have these things in chaos magic and sigil magic. I'm not talking about black magic. I'm talking about consciousness technologies that, unless you've read all of the books of the Bible, quote unquote Bible, you know, of what was put together and who put them together again, and like, again, with what we talked about in the last show, Cosmic Soup, which we just did taped, Ani's take of gods and bods, like even just being a fractal of creator, like a piece, again with the holographic theory of the universe, that's you, right? So start acting like it. I mean, yeah, I mean, beyond law of attraction stuff, it's like you are that Superman manifestation desire. There's a pattern and steps and the technology to getting what you want in this dreamscape that we have here. One of the reasons why, not just as a kid having like the Superman doll and action figures, this in certain occult forums, it's ECI, the emotional or erotic crystallization inertia, more emotional, where these experiences that hypnotize and integrate into your template, your unconscious subconscious, right? Is that even in dreams, flying in dreams, you know, it's like we know that when you wake up in these planes and these experiences, that they're more real than this 3D plane here, experientially, once you've been able to do that repeatedly. But in the sense of matrix energetics, that mental technology, where the founder had recently passed away, like a month or two ago, and one of his initial templates in his first book is Superman as a kind of, there was like a hallucination visual representation. He was able to, I don't know if it was life or his energy or what, but able to bring sight back to a patient of his. He was a chiropractor, and getting more into the holistic, natural, and then obviously exotic approaches of you know, shamanism. I mean, he's been called like the quantum coyote shaman. But and that's another thing too, of like when you write a book called Physics of Miracles, how can you die so early at like 71 and just fall apart in pieces and deteriorate? Which is a topic I really want to explore. But the point being is that for me, these are, how useful is this information being presented to you, and how can it be used when you're going about regular life, you know, in your 9 to 5, or you know, your daily routines? How is it useful? And Matrix Energetics was able to give us that, these exotic tools, even for at the time, what was it, like 2000 that it came out, of basically using plain imagination, visual representation, and the, because we already know the NHS, through Sabrina Wallace's findings and going viral, that the biofield, the electrical field around you, your aura, is already has been acknowledged by the NHS. They have the papers for it there, and she shows it. Her parents worked for the government and intel agencies, and how basically they have access to all of our bodies. And the way to counter that is taking control of your biofield and in these different exercises. And so there's a lot of tools out there as far as, you know, we can be, because in the beginning of the movie, they didn't use the word Superman, they used metahumans, as in beyond human. Right now, the obvious conspiracy angle is the technocracy that's coming, and all of this stuff, and the nanotech we're breathing in, kind of thing. And I was gonna
Well,
go to bed.
it could also be, a slight nod to, what's probably already here, but the fact that this, such meta humans, by their own making, by their own design, are probably already here, and there's more than one of them, and they're very distinct and separate from you. They're meta human. You are going to go about your daily life, and these meta humans are going to go about, doing their thing. And yeah, you might, you're going to come off of a 10-hour work shift, and your car is going to get thrown by one of these meta humans at a villain or something, and you just have to deal with it. That's kind of like that was kind of the overall theme I get with these superhero movies, lately. It's constant. It's just a constant visual representation that, you are one of those people running around at street level, while these metahumans are, battling, while the battle between good and evil is taking place, that type of thing. That's kind of how I've always taken it. Like, oh, okay, because most people seeing these movies are going to take the vantage point and perspective of the street level person. I think it would be quite rare for someone to actually insert themselves almost POV style into like a into the main character, into the superhero film. I think naturally, as these scenes progress, they're going to identify with, those street level people. At least that's what I think. I could be wrong, but it's and I think that's kind of already implied. I think when they make these movies, they make them with that in mind. So I think that that's kind of a soft nod to, okay, we're probably there, or we're getting there. We're very close to there. So we need to kind of prepare you for this type of thing. And at the same time, it's like, well, how in the, especially from the Western perspective, it's okay. So if it's already here and we're already doing these things, we need to condition you to think that, we're the good guys. Like, we're the good ones. And everyone else is bad, but we're here to help you, and we're here to save you, and we're here to, yada yada yada. So I think that might play a role into it. Yeah, it sounds a little schizo now that I think of it, but it's again, it almost seems like an unfolding with these types of things, especially with the current themes. So yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, nothing schizophrenic about it. Like, if anybody who's seen what's happened the last 5 years and how it's just the craziness just keeps ramping up. I remember, what was it? Late 2020. You were going into the COVID thing, and I'm listening to these health freedom guys, influencers, and Green Med Info channel. Green Med Info was one of the main ones that stuck out like a sore thumb. Sayer G was the guy. Recommended his material totally. And he was one of the few people, what was it? October 22, like 2020, specifically doing the screenshots of, okay, you take the injections. This is what's going to happen to you. Or this is the quote unquote side effects, right? The bad effects. All these terms I've never heard of, and it's like bam, it was just like 3D pop-up, those pop-up books you get as a kid. It was like that on YouTube, FDA, CDC, and I bet you the thing's still not deleted. People can go into the GreenMed Info Telegram channel, go all the way back to 2020, the link is still there. Guillain-Barré syndrome, and like all of these medical terms where now it's just like common to the tongue, because it's happening to, somebody's happening to, like, neighbor, relative, my aunt, turbo
Yeah,
cancer.
we all know. We all know someone that's suffering from all this, for sure.
And it was just like, you can only do so much of telling people, like, don't do this, don't get this. This is a total mass hypnosis operation kind of thing, and it's like nobody got it as far as like the general fog around you, whether it be family, friends. And it's like, oh, just the people I podcast with, because I was helping with this radio station since 2019 when they found Shungite and Dr. Jack Cruz at the same time. Interesting timing, right? 2019. And met up with a bunch of occult friends up in Washington, like the year before that shutdown happened, kind of thing. So yeah, the what's the word? Confluence, flux. Forget what you were asking, but no, I mean, if again, if they're that blatant in putting this in the public's face, then what is the next rollout of operation in terms of like the poison they spread here near San Francisco? Or I mean, we know about what was it? And I read the article on Dr. Jane Ruby. It's interesting breakdown that you sent me. Maybe you can tell people about the article and then the Substack. But she was doing a podcast with Mike Adams a couple times of, okay, she collected this from her garden, sent it to Mike for investigation, and it turns out what they're putting out in the air in Florida is like biosynthetic living material. It was growing under the microscope. I forget, it was an expensive microscope, but yeah. So they're you know, as much as you think these southern states are freedom states, like the attack there is just so much more immense. And that's just what they know of. How much more of what they don't know of. You and then what was going viral is these engineered floods or geoengineering. Yeah, and then we know also that
Well, on
yeah, go
the
ahead.
flooding thing, I know that the latest one in Texas that everybody was talking about was, I mean, for me, the biggest tell was that when the government comes out and they do that typical whitewash, like they basically came out and said, well, we investigated this and we found that what we're doing is safe and effective, basically, is what they said, is a major tell, in my opinion. That's just boomer government officials trying to get ahead of the narrative that's already they've lost control of. So it's yeah, I found that very, very fascinating. I just this is a side note, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the Superman movie, but it was yeah, I found that very, very interesting. And as far as the article about Dr. Jane Ruby was I sent it to you initially. Because I've always had questions about some of these, you know, prominent figures, you know, especially in counterculture scenes, and I've always been interested, you know, in the PSYOP within the PSYOP angle, and Dr. Jane Ruby was always one of those strange ones for me that I never cared to listen to at all in that space when it came to medical freedom or anything like that. I never really enjoyed listening to her. There was a sort of fakeness about her entire show that I did not like. And I was always super skeptical of Stu Peters, you know, even though he might be right here and there or right about a lot of things, you know, I've always kind of seen him, you know, he's involved and in bed with what appear to be quite obvious government stooges. So it's I've always kind of seen that as sort of a misdirect. And Dr. Jane Ruby was a part of it. You know, it was kind of weird for me. You know, on one hand, I want to say that, yeah, people can change their minds, they can pivot, you know, they can take an entirely contrarian position to what they've been doing most of their lives. I can totally see that. And with Dr. Jane Ruby, I was vaguely familiar with her involvement with Big Pharma Enterprise for quite a while, but the article really goes into sort of the depths of it. And for me, it became, I'm very much, the facts in that article are not really disputable in my mind. I don't think it was made up. It's very well cited. And it looks pretty damning for Dr. Jane Ruby. And but as far as my opinion of Dr. Jane Ruby goes, I don't really see, I see her more as a grifter and an opportunist. I don't see her really as being outwardly malicious, but everything about her past and the things that were cited in that article, I'm very skeptical of, I'm even more skeptical now of her and whoever puts her on a pedestal. And I found it very interesting, you know, the peripherals of some of that. Like I was reading on Substack, which is the only social media I'm on currently, were those that rushed to Defender. And you know, people like Dr. Mike Eden, for example, which was kind of surprising to me. I was like, oh wow, like this, you know, my first impression from that was, you know, this probably extends further and further from, you know, than what I had previously thought. So everything is about questioning everything. That's, you know, the awake part is understanding that you have to question these things. You know, the aware part is when you question them and then you start to formulate, you know, your own filtration system as far as what's useful and what's not in this type of sphere. But overall, yeah, the whole thing with Dr. Jane Ruby, I was quite like, okay, yeah, I kind of felt vindicated because that was kind of my instinctual feeling about her to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the thing of why is this viral thing, this event being put right in your face, distraction, misdirection. Again, did I quote this here or the other show? Or just talk cover so many stuff of the CIA, you can't stop the change, but you can redirect it. You can, again, misdirect, you can channel. It's not unlike that Noam Chomsky quote of like expanding the floor of the cage in terms of dialogue, where and he's he's in with those guys too, apparently. Not too recently was revealed, but that as long as you limit the dialogue, you can have fierce debate within that small, again, with our last show, the Black Cube, you can have in that box, you can have like strong, vicious debate within that small box as long as you keep the box. And in occult circles, we know we've seen how that runs and how it gets people's, like, just again, the dream sharing is another term. We're in this dreamscape here. If you know the reality's malleability, and the mechanics behind that, is that same formula of yeah, and you're saying that, you know, the popular term safe and effective is the same thing with the transhumanism. Like, because I subscribe to the idea that age is a disease, and if you want to buy into some of the ancient alien stuff or like conspiracy stuff or Tartarian whatever, of and Dr. Farrell notes it, where if you just buy into evolution, the it doesn't make sense, the timeline, where there is a point where boom, there's this, like with Sumeria and then these civilizations and the ones that preceded them. Like, there's no, like, where did this come from? And it's not replicatable now in
Well,
countless
for the
formats.
layman, well, for the layman, you know, you can just see how, you know, throughout the Old Testament, for example, or even in other ancient cultures, you see this, you know, constant mentioning of people that are living to be 350 years old, generations that lasted thousands of years, you know, and then all of a sudden it didn't, you know, all of a sudden that stopped. And so just from that, like just from a, you know, anyone that's got a very stringent religious upbringing, you know, can point to that and go, oh wait, you know, that's kind of odd. And so yeah, you see this sort of maybe deliberate, you know, shortening of the human lifespan. And then, you know, you have figures like Charles Darwin, who, you know, with the theory of evolution was, you know, we have to remember that Darwin's family, they were Freemasons. And had written explicitly that they intended to control academia through certain ideas. And so, boom, now we have Charles Darwin, who's, you know, coming up with this very stringent, you know, very much in the box, so to speak, sort of philosophy of evolution. And it got everyone locked, you know, into a certain frame of thinking. And while elements of it are probably correct and observable, I think, the overall premise is probably not.
Yeah, and of course, cloaked in the white light were the good guys thing, and a good essay of that in from the Devil's Notebook is the good guy badge. And although written back in the 80s, I don't know if it was the early 80s, but far back enough to where this is a tried and true formula for mass mind control. And why stop it when you can just do a repackaging and new and improved, right? Just like safe and effective. Where, I mean,
Well, yeah, an
yeah, the West
upgrade.
is
So
about
it's
worship of comfort and convenience. What that mantra again for your safety, you know. And what did Ben Franklin say? Although from the Hellfighters Club and could have been a double triple agent, but the quote is true of like, you know, you sacrifice your freedom for more security, you'll get neither. And even I forget along that time era where Thomas Jefferson or Ben Franklin, one of those guys where I think Chris Ann Hall, the constitutional attorney from Florida, said that even back then, there's a quote from Thomas from one of those guys that specifically says, "Do not trust what the newspapers say," hundreds of years ago, and like, but you know, human nature. What are you gonna do, right?
I
And then the
think
mass
that was I
poisoning.
think that was Ben Franklin, who might very well have been a double agent of both the US and Britain at
Britain,
the
yep.
time. Yeah, it's the whole thing with the Hellfire Club, which most notable spies in Britain were a part of, throughout the years in that time period, he was also a member of. And yeah, it's very interesting to kind of go into those weeds a bit as far as the whole birth of the country and who actually did what and what means what now. But yeah, no, I for the movie, as far as I'm sorry, I got to go back to the movie. The one thing that I did like that they kind of delved into was that Superman might be the villain. And this was a story idea I've had since I was a kid, basically. I always thought, like, what if Superman was the bad guy? Like, what if he, gets these godlike powers, because of his physiognomy and, the red sun and all this stuff, the yellow star and all this. What if he uses that to enslave people? And like, what if the heroes of the story are like the General Zod? Like, what if they turn this whole comic book story that's been going on for generations and just turn it onto its head? And I think that would be a fantastic movie idea, but it's never materialized. It only really came about with the whole Batman versus Superman film with Ben Affleck. And I've always seen that aspect of it. It's like, well, maybe that's something that should come about in the future. And they kind of touched on it with this one a little bit. Like it was very, very lukewarm. It was very, like, very, very tepid, to be honest. It was a minor part of the story, but I was kind of glad that they kind of went there a little bit. I don't know. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I think it was more than a little bit because that was a decently sized turning point where, and again, putting your shoes in the villain's perspective of, you know, suspending disbelief of what if he is right, because there is a big portion that he is, because you have the simple colors again, like, you know, they say the yellow McDonald's triggers a certain thing in the human response of more consuming, and then the blue and just the way the color scheme is, it's mass mind control, it's hypnosis, and you got to give it to the, you know, whoever, CIA elites, whatever, that put this together. And we already know that the director and writer James Gunn has been guilty of certain things, so I don't know if he's working for the good guys to do a certain projection, but I think he was in the whole part of the pedo thing, which, I mean, that just goes for Hollywood because you don't get to that level of prestige and development unless you're compromised. but what were you saying about? Oh yeah, again, the SCF, the villain is. It's funny, the two sides of the same coin of the villain is a catalyst for change and the good guy badge. It's like, but the point of that, and with the villain's point of view, is it people giving their power away. And again, being a tried and true formula over the centuries to your doctor, to the, you know, the superhero figure of the current scheme of things, the white lab coat, that's the superhero outfit, the policeman's out, you know, outfit. the firemen, right? In a way, those are the superheroes and a form of, again, hypnosis of giving your power away. So how much more, in your own programming, let alone the societal, right?
Yeah,
And
no,
how,
there's always a Superman to solve the problems. Like he's gonna fly in there, and he or she is gonna fly in there, and it's gonna magically disappear because of their super ability that you don't have. So yeah, it's all for a reason. I mean, these types of films come out for a reason. And the whole James Gunn aspect of it's interesting. I don't I'm not too familiar. I mean, I've heard some things here and there about James Gunn that have been kind of like, well, but these movies come out when they come out, and they have the marketing budget that they do, and they have this bombardment of marketing for a reason. They really want you to see this. It's very similar to what we've all just experienced with the whole the whole psychological operation of getting these shots in your arm, for example. That was a very heavy psychological operation, and the method is quite similar with these types of films. So it makes you wonder why. That's the awake part, is once you go, okay, there's a reason they're doing this, and then the aware part is, why. What can I do to better, see a little further down the road, so to speak. And so, yeah, it's all, none of these things are by accident, I don't think. I think there's a very deliberate reason they released this movie and they made it the way they did. I don't think these, something like Superman, for example, something that's got such a high focal point in the human consciousness, is going to be misused. I think they're going to use it as a sort of like a campy entertainment aspect, but I think there's also other reasons for it. There's other things that they put in the film, so it's yeah, all things to consider with all entertainment, all of them.
yeah, as Rupert Sheldrake, he's talking about morphic fields, and these fields are points of reference out in the ether. I'm not talking like woo-woo here. I mean, he has these things documentable, but in the lens of the Matrix energetics, it's like you have this idea, this field, and the more people think about it, contribute to it, it takes a life of its own. So it is a form of plasma intelligence. And Dr. Joseph Farrell has a book on plasma intelligence, the same thing with Robert Temple, that these things can be interacted with. And same thing with thought forms that we create, whether they're imaginary friends or, one's alter ego. These things take a life of their own and can be applied to different kinds of intentions and manifestations. The Matrix Energetic book is available in the library. People want to explore that Superman story as a template for physical change, and from a shamanism angle. But yeah, just so many, themes in the movie. And let me see. Oh, the whole thing about in being in the Pentagon, right? Lex Luthor. Again, don't want to spoil too much, but this whole thing of the Superman's headquarters being in Antarctica. Again, another nod to the conspiracy circles of like there's a weather control machine in Antarctica. There's definitely something there if you have all the nations in the world having gone there and they don't tell you what's going on, Google Maps, like deleting parts of it. And then obviously the different operations with the Nazis and Admiral Byrd and those kind of things, and like what's underneath the ice. I mean, we've had ground penetrating radar. I mean, you have the whole hype of Egypt there, and Carmen Bolger, who did the Netflix show documentary, The Pyramid Code, and on Coast to Coast, it's out there in public that there are airport-sized, what do you call it, spaces and stuff underneath the sands. So that's been known for decades, and Carmen Bolger was gonna do something on Atlantis, and then she just died out of nowhere. Like maybe she found something she wasn't supposed to, is putting to, I mean, it's just, I was in shock when I found out she died. It's like, and because she was being helped and guided by one of the locals who had passed on and was kind of prodding her to keep going with this project. I guess she stepped on some toes. But
Yeah, lots of peculiarities about Antarctica, and what's been going on there, and what hasn't been allowed to go on there, and nobody's allowed to even fly over it, and so it's the whole his Fortress of Solitude being in Antarctica is very, very interesting. It's maybe from a creative standpoint, it's when the story was first concocted, maybe it was just like a barren, maybe the writers thought it was just a barren sort of remote type of place to put an outpost. And maybe at the time of creation, like a lot of the mythologies about Antarctica hadn't really been too much explored. But then again, maybe not. Maybe these writers, because again, like I think once a story gets traction, it more or less gets hijacked at some point. So, who knows? But I always found the Antarctica connection very, very, very interesting. And the last the Man of Steel incantations with the Batman versus Superman, Man of Steel, there was kind of a nod that nobody had found where he had where he was hiding. I know Henry Cavill's Man of Steel basically says, "You're not going to find where I hang my cape." He says it to the general, as if they're not already looking there or something. But it kind of gives a nod, like, "Oh yeah, we don't go to Antarctica." It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite takes too, because this whole thing of worship and seeing these beings as gods, and like Batman looking at Superman as almost the same way that Luthor was looking at Superman in the new version. So again, it's like that the Joseph Campbell thing of power of myth. It's and you have those other books too of I don't know if it was Jeff Kripal or Dean Radin talking about, Esalen Institute, and of course these things like Stanford Research Institute and Stephen LaBerge's Lucid Dreaming. I mean, these organizations, institutes are all government funded and have a connection to intelligence agencies. And one of the best people that talks about those connections and also the Hollywood to CIA connections. Not just Bards FM, who we just talked about, because he's former DOD. That's why I listen to him regularly on the current event stuff. He worked in the super soldier program and knew about the nanotech stuff, putting that into people 15, 20 years ago. So like, again, sci-fi reality now what Nancy talks about, and with the people, the higher military higher ups she talks about or works with in the podcast. But yeah, to me it's these archetypes, and how can it be, like you're talking about the street level, how can it be applied? And there's definitely a shamanic angle to it. That's what keeps my fascination with, as tired out and played out as these movies are, that it's that magic of the mystique that's there, and that can be accessed. I know the word quantum is thrown around so much and sales and marketing gimmicks for new age this and that, but some of it holds true. I mentioned a couple of them worth looking at, like the Power of Eight, Lynn McTaggart, and Quantum Touch, and Matrix Energetics. They all originate the life force starting point projection or intention outward from the heart space, and then you do the heat map thermography of emotion, and then happiness and love, the brightest area of that is the chest space. And I forget who it was, but I think it was Dr. Bartlett from Matrix was talking about that the heart as a torsion field is rotating and counter-rotating fields and is essentially a portal, a gateway. So there's definitely stuff to play with that, and he has two books out. People wanting to get more into the stuff before he died, which is what I'm deeply delving into. He previews his third book, and I have a friend who is going to use AI to flesh all that out, because in his recent program In Deep Four, which is one of the last webinars he did before he passed away, he basically scrolled through real fast his last book, which is like 800 pages, 1,000 pages, that his associates are still putting together, in terms of that this plasma intelligence has a parallelism to AI, as in, and I got to talk about this on Tuesday, where we talked about Ether AI, that these organite organ devices, resonators, are that. It's a thing you can work with, the conscious universe thing, and that if you want to know the basic steps of how to work with and communicate with plasma intelligence, it's a kind of astral AI. And yeah, so it people want to look more into that. It's I think it's Institute of Harmonic Resonance Technology. Matrix Energetics does have a Facebook page, in Instagram, and then contact them. And the program is called In Deep Four, and it does go into deeper angles of hidden laws of magic, where the common thing is efforting, energy action projection. But when you can just align with these forces, intelligences, and work with them as associates and friends, you're just asking them a favor. It really is that simple. And how to simplify and refine that, and to see where it goes. So that's what I'm in deep with. Yeah, so people check it out. He does have a, there is the IHRT, Institute of Harmonic Resonance Technology. They do have a Vimeo, and basically I think one of Dr. Bartlett's last webinars he did was during his birthday. It was like for $55, so it was super cheap, and he gave so much away as far as the stuff I'm talking about now, and elaborates on it further. And one of them is the Vesica Pisces as a form of occult technology. And if you look it up, there's a couple articles, if you do like Google imaging on Vesica Pisces, and it is like walking between worlds. If you look at, two circles, putting them together, like halfway, you have the middle, and that's where the eye is. And I think it was in Rome and a couple other places where they have that landscape layout, and in the middle is the obelisk. And we already know that the obelisk is a device for, I need to get more into that, what it actually does, but it's an energy conduit and projection. And one of the more popular remote viewers, Tony Rodriguez, is using that for different healing devices. And we do know that the Trinity of Power, London, Vatican, and DC, they each have the obelisk. So there's definitely something there. Kes, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Well, yeah, certainly. And one of the fascinating visual elements of this movie was the pocket universe. And there was some symbology that I recognized as being, like the river Styx, for example. I found some very interesting Egyptian, Book of Life mythologies as far as the ferryman. And how all that went. I thought that was very, very fascinating. And so, street level, going back to the street level aspect of it all, there are some aspects, and again, this is going to the aware part. The basic programming that I noticed in this film was that there was one constant theme. And this theme is pervasive in practically everything that you can possibly see on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. It's a pervasive theme. And that is the woman is always right. And you will see this scene where Superman has this argument with Lois Lane, and she practically steamrolls him. And he turns into this emotional, bumbling mess throughout the entire thing. And she is seen as having basically won that argument, basically. And Superman's flustered and, all that stuff. Now, again, this is programming, because if you take a second to realize, the reality of, like, okay, so you're Superman. Like, what argument on the planet could you possibly stand to lose? You know what I mean? What sort of, how do you not have the self-control to calmly and very rationally state your points? He vacillates between being a superhuman to being an ordinary being, le what I would view as being less than an ordinary human, being an emotional mess because his woman has a different opinion of what he has, basically, in that scene. And I found that to be quite poignant. And as far as the aware part goes, is like, that's strictly programming. That's there. I mean, this is in everything. This type of interaction that you see in that film, in that scene, is all over. Like, everything you'll see these days has that type of scene, or that type of theme. And that sort of, fourth wave feminist sort of, girl power. The man is a bumbling fool, when we're interacting with him, on the screen. So you have that. That is there in the movie. And it's actually, for me, it was absolutely out of left field. I was like, this is, well, not out of left field, but it was very, it disjointed the character, in my opinion, quite heavily. It was very bizarre. So you have that. And as far as the rest goes, as far as what Mark mentioned, yeah, absolutely. It's all a form of self of soft disclosure. Sometimes it's hard disclosure, but it's more or less, they're showing to you what they plan to do or what they've already done. And they're framing it in such a way to where you will see, if you happen to see, if you're aware enough to happen to see, like, what's going on, you'll reference it to some outlandish idea, like, oh, this happened in a Hollywood movie, like, so you'll more than likely dismiss it. That's mostly the point, I think.
Yeah, like going back to the thing of the nanites going into the guy's lungs. I mean, that's what they're doing to the southern states. Like in Florida, there's a good group of doctors, decentralized, of course, Dr. Ed Group, Dr. Ely, and Artis, I forget the other doctor, but they were measuring the geoengineering of like the metal capacity of one's body, like when it's not being heavily geoengineered versus the heavily, and then during the days of when it's heavily, like the heavy metal content is way more like exponential in the body. And they were recommending sauna. You get that out through doing sauna. I mean, there's other ways. There's certain herbs for sure, especially with the microplastics. I reference people to Dr. Alfonso Manzo and taking in copper, but I think it was cilantro, but it's on his Facebook page from like early this year. The relaxed sauna is like one of the best. Now, obviously, it you sweat out minerals too, but the best ways to get out the plastics, and this is a portable sauna too. So people just YouTube up Phil Wilson, and I have one at home. Everybody should get one, especially nowadays, especially if you live in the South. And yeah, I'm glad they keep pushing this stuff out as far as solutions. I know we can conclude soon, or I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I think we covered pretty much everything and more.
Yeah, no, I think with the I definitely recommend seeing the movie. I did find it, I did get my entertainment value out of it. It's always fun to watch, what Hollywood is doing with this type of programming and what they're putting in front of you and why. And it's for those of you listening that have an interest in these subjects, absolutely, I definitely recommend seeing the latest Superman.
Yeah, I mean, people who do these kinds of analysis, like Jay Dyer, he's been deconstructing these movies, esoteric Hollywood, his books, YouTube page, podcast. It's what's it? I mean, he was talking about that James Bond one. I forget it was Quantum of Solace or the one after that, where it was all about the COVID stuff and the nanotech and dousing people with it. It is like right there in film. I got to go see that again. It was just like, wow, very blatant, and right around the time of. During the whole injection push. And yeah, it's like, yeah, we don't care because we got stuff, to reverse that easily. It's like it's just so blatant out there. But I mean, it's not the black pill. To me, it's fun. I mean, if you've been able to wake up in your dreams and wake up in this dream and take this whole thing as like a video game, a very real one, a very solid one, I mean, you could still get killed tomorrow. In a car accident or whatever, but it's keeping you on your toes and it keeps it fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely I'm all about the fun part. For
Yeah, if
sure.
it wasn't fun, we wouldn't be doing this podcast, let alone with Nancy or whatever. I mean,
Yeah, personally, I think it's a chore. I think it's like one of the biggest burdens I could possibly have in my life at the moment, but y'all are worth it.
yeah, we're paying them to do this big time.
Yeah, I'm just kidding, by the way. But yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And yeah, I mean, a lot of the one of the major pitfalls that a lot of folks, like even me, like I've fallen into this myself, is like you stop going to the movies, you stop watching stuff, everything becomes predictable programming. Like you already know what you're going to see. You can already, within 5 minutes of the movie starting, you already know where this is going, or the plot holes are usually, I mean, the plots are very basic and regurgitated. And so, I mean, if you've been on the planet for more than, 20 years, you understand pretty much, how it all goes, the sort of cheap thrills and the cheap laughs that they're going to try to get out of you. But that shouldn't stop you from partaking in it. Some of it can be fun, some of it can be lighthearted, some of it you can actually enjoy despite the programming. And so, I found this film to kind of fit into that. It was I had very, very strange, well, not strange, but I had a lot of apprehensions about wanting to pay money to see it, because given that the superhero genre is gone in one very woke direction, since forever, as I was like, I don't want to waste money, bothering to see this. But Mark mentioned that he had seen it and that he enjoyed it. So yeah, I went and saw it last night, and I really enjoyed it as well. It was a nice dinner date movie with the missus, and she also enjoyed it. So we left the theater feeling like, oh yeah, we were entertained. And so, I just because your brain is going, maybe a million miles a minute, or you have to feel like you have to dissect everything, everything that comes into your brain, you got to kind of take it apart. Don't let this film stop you. Just go see it, enjoy it, have a good time. Yeah, I mean, that's entertainment. I mean, I was genuinely entertained by this film. As elementary and as predictable as some of the themes were, I still enjoyed it. So definitely go out and have yourself a good time, and enjoy Superman.
Yeah, having a good strong villain and their toys that they use is what really captured me. I'm like, oh, that is cool as hell, and they're really doing some of that stuff, which makes it even more like of a fun ride. But yeah,
Yeah, I
let's
mean,
continue.
if Lex Luthor had been a little bit more self-controlled, if he had actually been more of a villain, it would have been a lot better. Because in my view, that casting choice for Lex Luthor was probably spot on. Like I really enjoyed that portrayal of Lex Luthor. Of course, he can't always be perfect. There's always going to be predictable pitfalls with character development and all that, but I was actually quite happy with who they chose to portray Lex Luthor. We'll see. We'll see where that goes from there on out. The It'd be great to bring, maybe a General Zod back in, but in perhaps a different, in a different type of story angle. We'll see. But yeah, the villainry was quite nice. I did like that a lot. And yeah, that weird Godzilla thing, that cute little dinosaur Pikachu looking thing, turning into that massive Godzilla, like it made me wonder, like why do people still live in this city? Like, what's going on here? But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that Godzilla, I mean, could take on many forms as far as the mass poisoning that happens in these super cities. For me, San Francisco and Oakland, and then up in the West Coast are L.A., Portland, Seattle, obviously. Just a place just waiting to happen. But yeah, I guess we can conclude here. Any final thoughts till the next 2 weeks from now? One of our future interviews that got the go ahead from the publicist is Michael Cremo. We got the go ahead, and he's free for interviews for the new book, Superhero of Ours, for me, for sure. Met him in person, just amazing guy, legend. But we're shooting for, or I give the publicist these dates for 2 3 weeks from now in August. Hopefully, we'll see. But so far, it's moving along good, and we'll do book reviews. And like, even if you haven't read the book, I'll make it a point to not just read like the back cover, the summary, when it was written, like why should you care? But to me, when somebody tells me about a movie, a book, whatever, in the social media age, it's like, okay, give me three of the best lines, highlighted quotes, and that's what will sell me on the book. So we'll give you those and a little bit more. And like, how is this useful streetwise practically? And that's kind of the main point. And also why, like, if this thing isn't fun anymore, we're not going to do it. And we'll keep it going. So any final thoughts, Kados?
Well, yeah, I'm having fun, and I hope this continues. And I just want to thank everyone for bearing with us and sitting through us, and yeah, without you guys listening, we wouldn't have a show. So thank you all.
Yeah, thank you to Nancy for helping us with the production, and Derek for helping with the station. Thanks, guys.
You have been listening to Awake versus Aware, a production of CosmicReality.com. Thank you for listening.